You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me, as always, the man, Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what's up, bro?
I had a good weekend. I had my first, in November, I only had one day off all month. So I actually had Friday and Sunday off this weekend, and it was just kind of amazing.
I bet, dude. That weekend off, man, sometimes you got to use that to refresh the old body and mind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's just like Friday, didn't get the greatest news. Then Saturday, got the best news ever. So it was just and it's what we're going to open up the show with. So it's just, it was kind of a weird weekend.
Right. So you just mentioned it, so let's go ahead and kick off the show with it. So TakeOver has moved to Friday. Is that right?
Yes.
And that is the upcoming TakeOver that's going to be when is that going to take place?
That is going to take place Friday, April 5th now.
And that is the one, and that's WrestleMania weekend, right?
That's WrestleMania weekend.
Up in the old NYC area.
Yes. So, just to break it down a little bit, ROH and New Japan Wrestling, I'm starting with them because it actually impacts the situation.
Gotcha.
ROH and New Japan decided to do ROH New Japan Super Show. And ROH has been doing a Super Show the Saturday before WrestleMania for a few years now. Well, New Japan, of course, trying to build their American brand, decided to do a combined show. So they announced tickets for Saturday, April 6th, the day before WrestleMania, at Madison Square Garden in New York. Well, these sold out. All 10,000 tickets sold out.
It sold out kind of quick, too, right? Not all in quick, but quick.
But like within a week, it was done.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty dang quick.
Yes. Well, it probably would have sold out quicker because most people, like me, thought they had to choose. Because they were running on Saturday night, that's the same night as TakeOver. And like most people, whenever a TakeOver is run, it's the highlight of the WWE weekend. It's a harder ticket to get than WrestleMania most of the time. So we had TakeOver versus ROH, and a lot of people thought they had to make a decision, me included. I had decided I was going to the ROH TakeOver, ROH G1 show, because I've been to like 7 takeovers, but I'd never been to ROH GO1 show. So I was like, and let's do it. You don't know how many other times you're going to get the show. So I decided. Well, Friday, Kerry Morris, you might know him. You might not know his name, but you will know him. He sits in the front row of every like major WWE event, and he wears a collar and elbow shirt, and he has blonde hair.
Yeah, I've seen him. I think you pointed him out to me before.
Yes, first row center.
Yeah.
Well, he's a package person. He gets the package every year, first row center package, and he said they sent out an email telling everyone, and he kind of copied and pasted the email, letting everyone know that they were moving TakeOver to Friday. Now, a lot of people have speculated, and it's mostly speculation because the WWE won't confirm it, is that they moved it because they didn't feel that they could sell out NXT TakeOver, or or, you know, sell out NXT TakeOver, or, you know, the eyes for NXT TakeOver wouldn't be there because they'd be split with ROH Supercard of Honor.
Right.
G1 Supercard, excuse me. So, so when it came down, so it came down to it, it just looked like WWE was making a great business decision by moving to Friday night. So originally, because the first NXT show the night before Mania was at WrestleMania 31. Of course, I was at that show, and it was on Friday, and then then Hall of Fame was on Saturday night. The first actual takeover was at WrestleMania 32, and it was on Friday. WrestleMania 33 is where takeover changed to Saturday. And then 34, of course, it was on Saturday. And it was a, you know, it went up against the ROH show. So you had to make a decision. You know, and a lot of people, you know, made their decisions and all that kind of stuff. And actually, I think NXT didn't sell out. ROH sold out, but it was only a 5,000-seat arena. And NXT did not sell out. So I think it was a business decision on WWE to do the best thing they can for to ensure a sellout. Now, there's a Joey Janela I think it's a Joey Ryan show that night, the MLW show on Friday night. So, of course, a lot of people that are fans of those products are pissed, but it's just like, generally, it's New York. There's like 10 million people there. And all the people that come in for the city, I don't think any show is going to suffer.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that. I wouldn't imagine any show suffering. And, you know, you can't really blame WWE for switching it to Friday, right? I mean, you don't blame them, obviously.
No, it's the greatest news ever. It's the most fan-friendly thing they've done ever to me.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, that, you know, it is a business decision, obviously, because the fan base that is watching ROH Supercard of Honor, or, you know, the same fan base that watches ROH is most likely also watching NXT, in my guesstimation. And so to maximize the amount of eyeballs that are going to be on your NXT show, you don't want to go head to head with the, you don't want to split the fan base. So, you know,
see,
get on them.
In my thought process, it's WWE's weekend. It's WrestleMania weekend.
Right.
The reason those shows are allowed to happen is because WWE is there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they're all building on WWE's coattails. So whatever the WWE does is acceptable to me.
Right.
Because it's their weekend.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't care if they decided to move TakeOver to Thursday at 3 o'clock or Friday at midnight and destroy anybody they want to, because you're there getting WWE scraps. You're taking advantage of the fact that there's 50 to 60,000 extra people in whatever city you are to say, hey, you want to see some other wrestling other than WWE.
Yeah.
That is why when people's like, well, ROH sold out this on WWE weekend. Well, that's impressive. But if you do what All In did, that's impressive.
Yeah.
You're taking advantage of people that are going to already be in the city anyway, as opposed to our All In that says, we're going to go to this completely different city that has nothing to do with the WWE. We're going to run a 10,000-seat stadium, and we're going to sell it out. That's impressive. What ROH did is they took advantage of, like I said, the WWE.
Yeah.
I do know there's a lot of wrestling fans that go into WrestleMania weekend and have no intention of seeing any WWE shows. I'm not going to pretend like that doesn't exist. It's just, it's become the wrestling week, but it's called WrestleMania weekend.
What are some, I should have asked you this before we went on air, but do you know, like, so WrestleMania weekend, the last few years, has there been any shows that you can think of that are, like the most popular non-WWE shows that generally happen on WrestleMania weekend? Like, is Joey Janela's Spring Break?
Joey Janela's break is always sells out. It's huge. It's always a good time. This year,
do you know how many? Do you know how many seats Joey Janela's Spring Break usually runs? Like a guesstimation?
I'd say 2,000.
Big enough, right?
It's usually a smaller venue, but it's usually like 2,000 or 3,000.
I mean, that's a rabid 2,000 or 3,000 fan base, though.
it would sell out 5,000 if it wants to.
Oh, really?
This year, it is on the Thursday night, I believe, at midnight. I mean, but Joey Janela's show is one of those shows he literally runs it at midnight. It is for the outcasts. It is for the fringe wrestling fans. It's pretty much for the non-WWE fans. It's not a children's show. It's literally at midnight, and it runs like 3 hours.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like I'm looking at the wrestling schedule right now, and
WrestleMania weekend?
Yeah.
Really? Where do you get that at?
Voices of Wrestling. If you go on the first page, up at the top right, it'll say WrestleMania Weekend 19 schedule, and it has like all the shows that are happening that weekend.
Oh.
So the shows that are affected by NXT switching their show, because you could say they're gonna probably start at 6 o'clock Central, so it'll be like 5 o'clock Eastern. So you're gonna have the WWN Super Show, Mercury Rising, and the Boom or Queens is going to. It starts at 4. So Rev Pro has a show at 4. Black Label Pro has a show at 4, and WWN Super Show has a show at 4. Now that does actually affect my weekend because I planned on going to the Rev Pro show.
Oh, really?
I will not be going to the Rev Pro show now because I'll be at Takeover. We'll be heading till Takeover.
Right, right. Do you know was the Rev Pro show going to be a big? Was it going to be a big show?
Well, Rev Pro is pretty much like everybody else in the UK. So you got like David Starr, Zack Sabre Jr. always works their shows. They have a deal with New Japan, so you would have New Japan people on that show.
Oh, I didn't I didn't know they had a. That's cool.
Right now, Tomohiro Ishii is their British heavyweight champion. And their tag team champions is Zack Sabre and Suzuki.
Oh, wow, okay.
And they're going to have the British title on the Wrestle Kingdom show. It's going to be Ishii versus Zack Sabre Jr. on the Wrestle Kingdom show.
Gotcha. GCW presents Joey Janela's Spring Break. Is that the GCW...
It's called Game Changer Wrestling. So Joey Janela's Spring Break is at, right now, it's at 8 o'clock that day.
Gotcha. Is that, is GCW, is that the one that, what's his face, just had that death match? David Arquette?
Yes, Game Changer Wrestling, yes.
They put on the death match?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did you watch that?
I did not. I've seen clips from it. Death matches do nothing for me.
Yeah, you've said that. We've talked about that on the show before, I don't think I asked you if you watched the whole... I didn't watch the whole match either. Found the clip of him accidentally getting stabbed, and it looked god-awful. I didn't know if you had watched the whole show or not. Or watched the whole match, rather.
Yeah, if you're into it, God be with you. Enjoy it. I have no problem with it. Literally does nothing for me. 1 to 2 minutes into the match, I'm not interested anymore. Because to me, it's like you get light bulbs and all that stuff busted on you, and then I watch you in your next match and you lose to a DDT. I'm like, no, what? It literally throws off the whole logic of wrestling for me. I mean, wrestling is not super logical as it is, but the little logic that I have invented in my brain, it throws it off.
So you're not going to be able to go to Joey Ryan's penis party either, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because I am staying in the WrestleCon hotel. So I was like, I mean, basically I had kind of broken down my schedule before. I was going to do the WrestleCon Super Show Thursday night And then on Friday night, there's this WrestleCon USA versus the World. Since I was going to already be at the convention, and that comes with your convention ticket, I was going to go to that show. And then I was going to go to Rev Pro at 4. And then, honestly, because it was Friday night, I might have, and it was doing the Hall of Fame, I might have went to the Access Friday night just because it's Access and it's Friday night. It's cool.
Right.
And I don't like going to the Hall of Fame. The idea of listening to old people talk does nothing for me.
Now, you've been to the Hall of Fame before, though, right?
No.
Oh, you've never gone. I thought you went once before.
No,
I got you.
No. When I went to 30, that was the Mr. T year.
Ah, okay.
And I was somebody I wanted to meet that Saturday night, but the worst part was I imagined paying money to sit in that crowd and listen to Mr. T drone on for like 40 minutes. Like, no. I'm either going to be meeting wrestlers or I'm going to be watching wrestling. Or, shit, I might explore the city that I'm in, you know, but...
Right.
The whole idea of watching people talk, I mean, like, about their careers or whatever, and I know most of the stuff that they're going to say, it doesn't, I mean, because of podcasts and stuff, we all know most of their stories. I've even said, I will go to the Hall of Fame one time, and that's when Undertaker gets in.
That's cool. I dig it. I'm surprised. But, yeah. So I pulled up the schedule as well, and we'll have a show, especially when it gets closer to WrestleMania time. And I still have not been able to confirm or not if I get to go. I want to go so, so bad. So I'm kind of waiting on the wife to give me that stamp of approval. But so I'm looking at Sunday, April 7th, 2019, and the only thing on the list is WrestleMania. I'm surprised that there's not more shows, like smaller shows that are running around the same time as WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Like trying to catch that fan base that came in, like that you were talking about, that came into the city to see the smaller shows. You know, they have no interest in going to WrestleMania, but they want to catch some of the smaller shows, you know, that are being able to be put on because of the large influx of people coming into the city because of a WrestleMania.
I think that's the one day that the WWE, like, it is an agreement with New Jersey, New York, Brooklyn. They can't run any shows that day.
Wow, okay.
I don't think they can. I mean, I know they do that. There are certain days where they will go out and basically black out an area and, like, no one else is running a show.
Hmm.
But you got to think about this. You know, WrestleMania is there 60,000. It's like people bid for WrestleMania.
Right.
So I imagine that is part of the bid. Not only are we coming, we're going to bring all of this, but no one else can run a show that day within, like, a certain radius.
Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. Is that a recurring show, or is this like the first time that you know of this one?
It was Matt Riddle's Bloodsport last year.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes total sense.
But since, you know, he's with Daddy Triple H now.
Right.
They had to go. And it's a different type of thing. There's like no ropes. It's almost like in a UFC ring.
Oh, really? I'm gonna have to YouTube that. I'm gonna have to see some of that because I did not. I mean, I just kind of assumed it was just a name. I didn't know about there's no ropes or anything like that. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, I won't make it in town for that show. I think I'm gonna be in about 3, so it's like I'm gonna check into my hotel, get all my stuff set up, and then I'm just gonna go downstairs to the WrestleCon Super Show.
Gotcha. So who's all? Do you know who's all scheduled to be at the WrestleCon Super Show, which is Thursday at 7 p.m.?
And honestly, not really, but pretty much anybody that's not signed with the WWE. That's how they do on the WrestleCon Super Shows. It's just like Pentagon, Rey Fénix, Colt Cabana, Sammy Callahan, Bandido, you know, those type of people.
I got you.
If you're healthy and you're not a WWE person, you will probably show up at that show.
At 8 o'clock on Thursday is DDT. Is that the Dramatic Dream Team, like from Japan?
Yes, that is their. I think that's. I don't know if that's their first American show, but it's one of them.
Got you. That's my goal in life, man, is to go do a 30 to 90 day tour in Japan as a wrestler.
That's a good goal to have.
Yeah, and my academy that I'm in has contracts with DDT and then one other smaller promotion that the academy has sent a couple of guys over to do 30, 60, or 90-day tours over there. So that's my goal in life, man, is that'll be my WrestleMania moment, you know, to be able to go over there for a month and tour and wrestle, you know, because you go over there and you're paid to wrestle, you know, 3 to 5 times a week, and you train daily, and they give you a place to live, and they feed you, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would absolutely, that's my goal, is to get good enough that, you know, I can go over there, because you get to bring that experience back with you. You learn a lot while you're over there, you know, and then in, you know, a non-work-related view of it, I mean, you get to go to Japan for a month. Like, how many people, you know, has jobs that give you that opportunity? You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So it's just really, really cool to think about. That's, you know what I mean? That's what I'm working towards. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, you know, and like we talked about it, and it's like, just always be the hardest worker in the room. That's the one thing DDP got across in his book, is that, and that's the one thing when you hear about DDP, he would be, I don't recommend this because this is dangerous. He'd had like little tape players, and he'd be driving and watching film of his shows. I mean, watching film of his matches so he can learn how to do better. He was always studying.
Really?
He was always. Yeah, he was meticulous. Before anybody had, you know, this all this portable stuff, he had many DVD players, many VHSs, so he could always study. He would wrap himself up in ice when he got up, got to his hotel room, sit there and watch tapes of him wrestling.
That's cool. You know, I remember building up to Halloween Havoc 98, I think, when DDP and Goldberg went 1-on-1.
Uh-huh.
Might not have been Halloween Havoc, but it was the one that they end up having to give away for free the next night. But Bobby Heenan was saying during the entrances and stuff like that, he was like, yeah, DDP's the guy that if you sit next to him on an airplane, he's watching tape and he's asking you, it doesn't matter if you're in wrestling or not, he's asking you, hey, does this look normal? Does he look like he's about to do a backflip right here? And he's just, you know, Bobby Heenan is really selling the fact that he always is studying and stuff. And I've always remembered that throughout the years, but I don't know, you know what I mean? You just kind of confirmed it for me. Like, I didn't know if that was just part of the storyline, if that was kayfabe. But,
yeah, Mick Foley said he used to be scared of riding with him because, you know, he'd be watching tape while driving.
Really? That's so funny.
He, you know, like, he wasn't the hardest worker in the room. He was the hardest worker in any room that he was in.
That's cool. That's really cool. That's what I want to be, man.
Because he knew that he was 15 to 20 years behind everyone else. So he's like, I can't make myself 20 again.
Right.
But I can work harder than everyone else. I can work harder than a 20-year-old.
Right, right. I dig it. I dig it, man. So next thing on the list, dude, did you see, I don't know if you follow Chris Jericho on Instagram, but he uploaded a picture with him and Don Callis and a few other Impact executives. So what do you think, man? Is Jericho going to show up in Impact soon?
Jericho start shit. You know, this could mean nothing. This could mean everything. This could be him trying to get the WWE to give him a WrestleMania storyline. Because if you're going to do a WrestleMania storyline, this is the time.
You got to start running. Yeah, you got to get going because the Royal Rumble's just around the corner, right?
Yeah, so basically what he's saying is, sign me or I'll be somewhere else.
Wow. Man, and you know, it's just shocking to me. It's not like, I guess it is. It's kind of shocking to me to hear that about Chris Jericho, because we've always known him as that guy that's super loyal to Vince McMahon. But you see, Chris Jericho has turned into a guy that's reinvented himself and is probably more popular than he's been in a decade. And he sees his own worth, and he's like, look, you know, use me or I'm going to reach my potential, my current potential somewhere else for someone else.
Well, let me say, if you look at last year's WrestleMania weekend,
okay,
I mean, some of the big names, Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, you know, those are the really big names, you know, the Mia Yims, they've all signed with the WWE.
Right.
So the indie pool is really getting small. Because the indie pool's getting small, Jericho's value is doubling and tripling to the point where it used to be a WWE payday, like a WrestleMania storyline, with, you know, they'd pay him so much and it would be good for a year. Well, now these indie shows are like, I don't have anyone to pay. And they're paying more than what the WWE's offering. And he has to do less.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it. I totally see what you're saying.
I mean, look at New Japan this year. He wrestled Omega. He wrestled Omega last year. Then he attacked Naito, like, just the night before. Nothing. Comes in, challenges Naito, beats Naito. Nothing, couple promos. Wrestles Evil, right? You know, attacks. He does the all-in thing. Then he attacks Evil, you know, where he dresses up like Evil or whoever and beats him up.
Right.
Then he wrestles Evil, beats him. And then that's it. He's only done, like, he's the talk of New Japan, and I think he's made 5 appearances.
Wow. Yeah, he's...
As opposed to WWE, when you come to WWE, you're going to work. Hey, you're on Raw this week. Well, Raw's stupid, and you really don't have anything to be... you'll be there at noon. You'll be there at noon, and you'll be there all day. Well, you only needed me for 7 minutes. I don't care. You know, you're still, when you're with the WWE, you do it the WWE's way.
Right.
I mean, the only person that gets that special treatment is Brock Lesnar. And Jericho feels he's as big a draw as Brock Lesnar, which I agree with. Because all of New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom numbers last year were broken. And a lot of the American people didn't come on until Jericho was announced for the card.
Right.
I mean, there's actual statistics to prove Jericho is a draw.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, and I can totally see Jericho thinking that he is a bigger draw as Brock, and I agree.
Yeah, and that I should be able to come in, basically do a start a feud, and he's like, I'm more entertaining, I'm gonna put on a better match, I'm gonna actually put on an entertaining match, I can work the mic on my own, he doesn't need Paul Heyman, he doesn't need all this. Jericho sells himself. He's gonna sell himself on social media, he's gonna sell himself on his podcast. You're going to get more from Jericho because people are going to be inundated with him selling himself, much like The Rock or Kevin Hart does with their movies and TV shows. It's like when you get Kevin Hart for a movie, you don't just get Kevin Hart, you get his 10 million Instagram followers, his 10 million Twitter followers, because he is a person that self-promotes all the time.
I see it.
And Jericho's pretty much the same way, but he does it with his wrestling matches. I mean, if you ever listen to Jericho's podcast, he starts off where everywhere Fozzy's going to be. Then he starts off with wrestling. And then if someone mentions a city Fozzy's going to be in, he says it. If he says someone mentions a city Fozzy was in, he's going to say it. He's going to say, well, I'll be in Japan for this time. He, you know, he promotes himself. He is a great marketing person for Chris Jericho.
Right.
And by in result, whatever company he's working for is going to get that much press.
Right, right. I see it. I see your point. Next topic, PCO signs an exclusive deal with Ring of Honor. Give me your thoughts on this, bro. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, we can actually tie that in with the other one. They signed PCO, a big name. PCO's Paul Carl Olivet. He was part of the Quebecers in the WWE, or Pierre Carl Olivet. He was part of Quebecers in the WWE. I think he had his own like biker gimmick in the WWE. He looks nothing like he did in the WWE.
Nope.
He has reinvented himself with deathmatch style wrestling, and he plays a Frankenstein kind of character. It's PCO is not alive. I actually got to meet him at StarCast Weekend. I have not seen a lot of his matches, but you can't, if you're in the extreme wrestling group, if you're a person that are super wrestling fans that watch wrestling anywhere else, he's a big name. You know, someone that's a casual fan don't even know who you're talking about. But, you know, to the hardcore wrestling groups that we're a part of, Twitter, Instagram, this was a big signing. He, you know, they need talent. ROH needs talent. The talk is, you know, the Elite's not signing back or whatever, but what I'm really getting focusing on is he's a big name. He's going to be a draw. He is going to be somebody that you can push, and he can be a monster. You know, if you want to make Jay Lethal look really good, you know, have him come in and beat the shit out of him, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so, and he's 50, and he's 50, and he's signing an exclusive contract with the wrestling company. And, you know, you have Minoru Suzuki, I think Jericho's 50, The Undertaker, you have those people that are that age that are 50 and still active wrestlers, but it's, you know what, you can name them on one hand.
Right.
You know.
Right.
That are signing exclusive deals, and them signing would be a big deal. This is a huge deal.
Yeah, for sure. Do we know what kind of money is involved with this exclusive contract that he signed?
No. I'd honestly say with ROH, you know, of course, I think Cody was like their record, and he was making like $1 million a year.
And that was Ring of Honor was paying him $1 million a year for it?
Yes. Wow.
That's cool, man. Because I knew that Cody had said, and I had never looked into it. So I'm not saying, I'd never looked into, how much Cody was making, per match or anything. I just knew that Cody said his first 365 days outside of WWE was the first time in a calendar year that he had made $1 million, seven figures. So I didn't know that. You know, most or all of that came from Ring of Honor. I just assumed that, you know, he was hitting three indie shows a weekend and they were paying him good. I didn't know that a lot of it was coming from Ring of Honor. So I would like to know, you know, even because the way I look at it is, you know, a 50-year-old man reinventing himself like PCO, if he signs a contract with Ring of Honor that guarantees him $75,000 a year, that's still a good contract.
I would guess it's in the six figures.
Okay.
I mean, probably low six figures, like probably like $100,000 or $200,000. And I gotcha. The thing is, he'll do their big shows and, you know, the house shows and stuff that he does. And then I imagine he'll still work his indie shows, you know, like just like Cody does. So, I mean, you know, Cody's was the largest contract in ROH history.
It was for sure.
He said that.
Gotcha.
So that is exclusive, and he's like he showed up on his first night and hadn't worked yet, and they cut him a big check, you know, and said, "Hey, let's go, let's work together." And so I imagine, you know, ROH is not going to be, they're not going to sign everybody to big contracts, but somebody like Cody Rhodes or something like that, you know, he's going to get money.
Right. You know what's crazy is ROH is owned by the Sinclair Media Group. They have the money that they could turn Ring of Honor into a huge deal. You know what I mean?
They could.
Yeah, but I don't. I've just kind of never understood. I guess they stay the size that they are to keep Ring of Honor profitable. That's the only thing I can think of. You know what I mean?
That's big. And yeah, and they're okay with being a syndicated wrestling program.
Gotcha.
Whereas a part, you know, like if you think about it, like if you listen to WrestleNomics, they say, most people say, if you want to compete with the WWE, it's going to cost $100 million.
Okay.
That's how much it's going to, that's like going to be your startup. That's getting the amount of wrestlers that you need, you know, the rings, all the stuff. Because you're going to have to put things into becoming a traveling circus. Stuff that WWE has built up over 30 years, you have to basically have default. Then you're going to have to bring in your producers, your writers, those type of things, to your marketing people, your lawyers, your... You know, people that's doing trademarks and stuff. You're going to have a lot of people working for you. And then you're going to bring in a roster. You're going to have a talent roster, referees. You know what everything that goes into a wrestling show.
Just right, do that on a much smaller scale than Ring of Honor, but yeah.
But what I was going to say, do that times. So ROH is probably what happens at a regular indie show times 10. WWE is what happens at a regular indie show times 1,000.
Right.
You know, there's no wrestlers putting together the rings at a WWE show. You know, which is, you know, I'm not saying anything. That's a great way to pay your dues. You should do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, but yeah, you expect once you get to that level that time has passed you. You know, it's like a pro basketball player showing up and sweeping the floor. Like, you know, someone like Porzingis, you know, with the Knicks showing up and sweeping the floor before practice. Like, you know, he's past that. He did that in high school. He did that in probably college. You know, now he's getting paid the big bucks to not do that, you know. Same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And it's like you got this whole idea of, you know, you're not even getting into trainers, masseuse, catering, all that other stuff that's at a WWE event. So if you want to be looked at WWE, you have to show up and be on WWE's level. The thing with... To me, the thing that killed Impact Wrestling, the thing that killed TNA, was trying to compete with the WWE.
Instead of being an alternative? Yes,
they had their six styles of ring. They were the buzz of wrestling. They had AJ. They had Samoa Joe. They had Christopher Daniels. They had Kurt Angle. They had Christian, you know, at the time. They had the best roster in wrestling. Everybody wanted to watch them on TV every week. And all they needed to do was stick with their niche. But yep. Then they were like, okay, we're going to go into Monday against WWE. And that's when WWE gets pissed off and starts signing all your people.
Right.
If you're looked at as an alternative, you're like, dude, we don't want to compete with the WWE. We just, you know, we want our little spot. They're still going to sign some of your people. But they're going to let you exist.
Right. Yeah, but no, I get that.
Pretty much everybody that was on their roster ended up going back to the WWE.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Final topic today. Have you seen the... I seen it on Wrestling Inc. this morning, and I wanted to bring it up. The second trailer for the upcoming documentary, Credible, which is... following the rehabilitation of Justin Credible, the former ECW world champion.
Yes, I actually watched it. After you hit me up, I said I went and watched the video, and I watched it, and I was just like, you know, Justin Credible was not just the best. He was not just the coolest. He was just incredible. I remember that, and it was just, yeah. That was his thing from ECW, and then he had that. He had a couple runs with WWE before ECW as the Portuguese Man of War,
right?
And then after ECW, he was in the group called X Factor, and then I think he did an Impact appearance or whatever. He was a star with a little S.
A star with a little S.
Yes, like. They're, like, The Rock is a superstar, all caps.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, like, Zack Ryder is a superstar with a capital S.
Okay.
You know, he, you know, he's like a star. Like, most hardcore fans know who he is. Mostly because of his name, which is like one of the coolest wrestling names ever. But then you get to the casual fans, they might remember X-Factor. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's kind of the hardcore casual fan, not the casual casual. The casual casual fan doesn't know who the fuck he is.
I got you.
I mean, seriously, it's like, I'll give you a grand if you tell me about Justin Credible, and I'll be like, I have no idea who you're talking about. I work with quite a bit of people that are not into wrestling, and Kenny Omega is not a crossover name.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Kenny Omega is one of the biggest names in wrestling, but people outside of wrestling, like someone would know who they don't know what a Kenny Omega is. They don't know what a Kenny Omega does. They think he's like a rock star or something, because he has kind of a rock star name. So just think about that. The only thing Justin Credible had going for him is because he was kind of there at the end of the Attitude Era. And that's when everybody was watching wrestling, so they might remember his name. And I'm just watching this, and he's like, you know, I was people's heroes. And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess. You would be surprised. Like, if you follow fandoms online, you would be surprised who are the hardcore, like, fandom people. You know, people have, there's a hardcore Zack Ryder, hardcore Kurt Axel group. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're in the WWE. I was looking at that, and I was like, Zack Ryder, which, nothing, he's barely on TV, has more Twitter followers than Cody Rhodes.
Really? I did not know that.
Like, Cody's not even at 1 million.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But I thought maybe, I still thought Cody would have more than Zack Ryder, though.
Like, all the women's wrestlers in the WWE have more followers than Cody Rhodes.
That's weird.
Yeah, because they're on TV. They're seen. Total Divas, that kind of stuff.
Ah, that makes sense. There. Yeah, you're right.
They're there. They have a following. So, that being said, you can see why they're so popular. But it was even shocking to me Saturday, because I'm a huge Cody fan, and Cody is pretty much one of the hottest names in wrestling.
Right.
Period. And I mean, people like him or don't like him, that's up to you. But there's no doubt he's one of the hottest names in wrestling. And the fact is that he doesn't have as many followers as Zack Ryder.
Right.
It's like, and Zack Ryder's like barely on TV on the WWE anymore.
Right, right.
Like, barely on TV. I'm like, and then, like I said, that's not a slight to Zack Ryder. I freaking love Zack Ryder. But he has 1 million followers.
Yeah.
You know, he has, you know, more followers than somebody that necessarily has a big name like Cody Rhodes. So you got to think about that, how crazy that is. You know, like, so JoJo, the ring announcer, she has 210,000 followers. That's just from being on WWE every week.
Right.
Shinsuke Nakamura, who doesn't tweet that much, 600,000 followers.
Nice.
So when you join with the WWE, it makes you more popular than anybody else. But let's look at Justin Credible, or AKA PJ Polacco. He has 63,000 followers.
Yeah. Still a good chunk. Still a good chunk.
I mean, it's a good chunk to, you know, me, you know. Actually, that's not even the right Justin Credible. That's some radio dude. No, that goes by Justin Credible. That's kind of funny. That's weird. That's not even that Justin Credible.
Oh, is it not?
I don't even know if he's on Justin Credible Wrestler. Shit, he might not even be on social. Oh, okay, PJ Polacco Twitter. Because, yeah, 36,000.
Cool, cool.
But you got to think about this. To me, Justin Credible is a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, to some people, Justin Credible's a DJ in L.A.
Right.
And apparently, by social media numbers, more people know who he is. So, if you're talking to a casual person, so, like, the reason I bring this up, let me wrap it back up to my original point, which is, I don't think any, I mean, when he said I was a star, I was like, that's a strong word. You were on TV.
I mean, he was world champion, though.
In ECW, when it was dying.
But, I mean, still a world champion, though.
I mean, it's true, but in ECW, when it was dying.
Right, right.
And I mean, I'm just being factual. I'm not. I like Justin Credible. Mm-hmm. I thought his character was cool. I thought it was edgy. You know, he came out with the jean shorts on. Him and Lance Storm looked like they should have nothing to do with each other. But
yeah,
their characters worked. Don't get me wrong. He had a kendo stick, the bald head. It was just like his character. Someone told me, they're like, if someone, a new wrestler, came up and said, you know what? My goal is to be just incredible. And I'm like, I would consider that a low bar. You know, I'm like, cool. Be just. And I mean, that's a nice little niche. But I just like the way the interview presented it, it's almost like he thought he was way bigger than he was.
Yeah, but I mean, don't you think that probably comes with the territory of being a wrestler? Like most wrestlers have an inflated view of themselves, wouldn't you say?
I guess so. I mean, it just seems like a lot of people are more realistic these days. Like Lance Storm, he had a great run, but he was like, I was never the guy. He's a very humble person. He'll be like, I was never the guy. It just came off like when I think of these documentaries, I think of Jake the Snake Roberts, who was a fucking legend. Razor Ramon that did something like this. He was a fucking legend. You know what I mean?
Right.
Justin Credible was lucky that ECW, what happened? I mean, he was basically like, Matt Taven's a great wrestler right now, right?
Okay.
What, would you say he's in the top 100 of wrestlers in the world of people that you know?
No.
Okay, he's Matt Taven. Now,
Matt Taven's never been a world champion.
Hold on, I was getting to that.
Oh, okay.
After we were going to talk about this. After the Elite leaves ROH, there is going to be a dearth of talent at the top. I guarantee you Matt Taven's the world champion within a year.
Okay.
He's going to be the world champion. And it's not because they're going to want to put the title on him. Ain't nobody left. Justin Credible was like, okay, Mike, this is how Justin Credible became champion. Mike Awesome. Mike Awesome screws over ECW, leaves and goes signs with WCW. ECW needs a champ. Mike Awesome at least does business, and Taz comes and beats him in like 3 seconds, chokes him out, and becomes ECW champion. Literally WWF doing ECW a favor. Taz then works their next pay-per-view where Tommy Dreamer beats Taz. After the match, Justin Credible comes down the ring after Tommy Dreamer had already wrestled and beats Tommy Dreamer for the title.
Right.
That's how he became champion. He became champion because there was no one else left. Lance Storm had gone. You know, Taz had signed. Mike Awesome had signed. WCW and WWF had raided ECW's roster. So that's why he was the world champion.
Yeah, but, I mean... And, I mean, you know, like I said, I think he probably has an inflated view of himself. And, you know, we don't know how much, you know, for all we know, he's reading strictly off of, you know, something they told him to say to help sell documentaries, you know, for all we know, you know.
And that's what I was going to get to. As far as what he's overcome, how far he's failed to how far he's going, I think this is going to be a great story. I wasn't really trying to bury Justin Credible.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't think you were. I really do see your viewpoint. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate a little bit. You know what,
like,
I mean?
I don't know how many people are going to see this.
Right, right. Yeah, it'll probably be like like the wrestling fan will see it. You know, it'll be a pretty underground thing. that
I will watch it. There's going to be a night, and it happens every year, where I catch up on all wrestling and all my TV shows, and I literally have nothing to watch. That's when I'll watch this.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely won't be like, you know, the resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, but it'll definitely be something that I'll watch, just if for nothing else, because I feel, you know, I have a soft spot for people that are getting clean and sober, you know what I mean? And then to try to use wrestling in a sense to help you get over your demons, like Jake the Snake and Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, and then now Just Incredible. I dig that because that's how I get clean and sober. So you know, I obviously view it in a better light than most people will. But
yeah, my first, let me tell you, let's say my nephew, who is very athletic, decided he wanted to be a professional wrestler. I'd be like, okay, I'd tell him all the hard stuff everyone knows. I'd make him watch the Hardy Boys thing that they did for WWE. I'd make him watch Jake the Snake Roberts. I'd make him watch all these documentaries of people that have gotten the drugs, gotten the pills, all that kind of stuff, and failed miserably. As a warning sign of, don't go down this path. I mean, they are great teaching tools. Like, even to this day, I could go in for surgery, I could go for whatever, and they say, well, here's this. I'm like, I'm good with ibuprofen.
I got you.
No, like, seriously.
I feel you. Trust me, I know.
Seriously, there is a place for those drugs. They have a medical necessity. But unless I am in dire pain, I'm just sticking to ibuprofen because I am so scared. I've seen what it does. I've seen otherwise intelligent, smart, intelligent, athletic, great men. It tears them down slowly. As in, you know, you are a person that I listen to and you talk about how what addiction has done to you. And it just, it's where I'm like, when someone says I'm scared of addiction, you know, I'm scared of being in that mindset, I think they're very intelligent.
Right.
Because that means you respect it. You realize addiction doesn't, you know, it doesn't have a name. It doesn't look for, you know, a certain person. It's not it only happens to that. It can happen to anyone.
Right.
So it's, to me, it's respect, and it's like, to him to put all his information out there, I mean, that's, I respect that also, because this seemed raw. This seemed like they caught him a lot of times when he didn't feel like talking or being taped, and, you know, and he's like, this is my life, that part where he yells, this is my life, and I'm like, you know, I get it, it's just one of those things. It's like, I really wanted to frame it into who he was. It's like, a lot of people won't know who he is, but hopefully his message can get out there.
Right.
And we'll focus on the message, maybe not the messenger.
Right.
Which is it's a very important message. It's like, the more people understand addiction and really realize that sometimes, like, you started for pain management, you mm-hmm. know.
Yep.
Wasn't, you didn't say, oh, let's do oxy and drink, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You literally had something wrong where that was prescribed to you. You know.
Right.
And that's how it started. It's like, I've always said, I'll tell people this as far as being fat. All right, yes, like a drug addict can stop doing drugs. He can go to rehabilitation and he can never do drugs again, right? Alcoholic cannot, you know, not drink. And that, well, people that are, you know, people that like have the prescription pain addiction and food, like, I have to eat. I can't just quit eating. You know, and, you know, as far as, it's way more prevalent you know, like cheeseburgers and all that stuff that I'm not supposed to eat is way more available than like drugs. I don't have to go to a back alley to get a cheeseburger. It's right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, prescription pills are the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
You let's just say you get hurt. You walk out to your car and you sprain your ankle, right? Or do something. You go to jail. You go to the hospital. They wrap you up. What are they going to try to give you?
The old pain pills.
They're going to try to give you pain pills because they're looked at as acceptable. They're going to literally, and you're going to have to look inside yourself and say, dude, I can't take that. Just give me like ibuprofen or aspirin or whatever.
Right.
That's what I'm like. Those addictions, people don't think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, man. It's rough. It's rough life, my friend. It's rough life.
Justin Credible gets in a car accident today, and he goes in, and he's in the hospital. Shit, he's probably on Oxy before he even, you know, before he's even responsible enough to tell them not to do it.
Yeah. True story, man. True story. It's a bad deal. I've seen, it was, I think the worst type of videos and stuff that we've seen, as far as addiction and alcoholism in wrestling has got to be the, indie show. I think it was back in 2011 when Scott Hall showed up and they pushed him through the curtain when he was horribly messed up. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, definitely.
Everyone should watch that, you know, and, the weird thing about it, to take it full circle, is Justin Credible was out there when that happened. If you remember, he came out and got involved in something Justin Credible was doing, if you remember, because Scott Hall punched the guy that led, you know, and then as he's selling it and turning around, Credible super kicks him and gets him for the three. So it's just horrible, just horrible. But let's not end it on a low note right there. So tell me, is there anything wrestling related that you are looking forward to this week, my man Floyd?
I am really looking to see how Raw recovers from last week.
Oh, because it was horrible last week, wasn't it?
It was. It wasn't. It was not the best show, to say the least.
And you know, I always say this. You know, well, we don't say that Raw and SmackDown is horrible too often. So when we do say it, that you had to know it was really, really bad because we, you know, our whole shtick is that, you know, we are glass or half full kind of wrestling fans. You know what I mean? Like, we always give Raw and SmackDown the benefit of the doubt. So when, you know, when we're like, man, that was pretty bad. Like, it is bad.
If anyone wants to go on YouTube and put in Taz on Raw from November, he went off on a Taz try. He definitely defends WWE. He's like, you know, it's hard to put together a show. It's hard to get everything, writers, producers. He's like, you don't understand that sometimes you think something's going to work and then it doesn't. Well, he went off on a 17-minute diatribe about how much Raw was shit last week.
What?
And how WWE, he doesn't understand how they put that out.
Was this on his podcast or?
Or it was like he has a morning show called Taz and Moose.
On like, in New York. Oh, well, on the radio in New York City?
Yeah, so it's called Taz and Moose Show. And he went on just burying the whole show.
Wow.
And it was like, he never does that. He says when he thinks something's wrong, but he never does what he did.
Wow, that's crazy. I'm going to have to check out his show because, you know, I kind of like Taz. You know, Taz kind of, he got some trash. He got some static for being a, you know, so-so color commentator at times. But, man, in his prime, in ECW, he was booked like the man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he has really, like, you know, you didn't think about this. He has really become a radio guy. I mean, like, the guy. He's co-host of Taz and Moose. It's 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily on CBS Sports Radio and Sirius XM 206. Then he has a podcast that he does three times a week called Body Slams and Beyond. I mean, he is, you know, big as far as that. He is a voice and he is a name in radio now. I mean, he's taken every success he did in wrestling and has probably became a bigger radio person than a wrestling person.
And is his morning show on 206? His daily show,
yes.
Is it?
Yes, Sirius XM Channel 206.
And is it wrestling?
It is. It's a sports show, but he talks about wrestling. Like, on Tuesdays, he talks about Raw.
Gotcha.
And Wednesdays, talk about SmackDown. So, what I was getting to is just, you know, he's become a big name. And he killed it. He destroyed it. He's like, dude, if I was a wrestling... I don't remember if this is the exact quote, but like, if I was a wrestling fan, I wouldn't turn it on next week.
Oh, he said I wouldn't turn it on next week?
Yeah. Like, you would have to win me back. He's just, he went off on Nia Jax and not being able to cut a promo. I listened 8 minutes, but it was pretty much everything we were saying, just louder and angrier.
I got you. I'm going to have to check it out. Channel 206. I'm going to have to check it out.
So, but yeah, I was listening to it when I was working 6 to 3. I would come in about 5:30 and I would listen to it every morning. The only thing is, the reason I quit listening to it is because he started taking callers. It's one thing I hate about radio, sports radio, when they take calls.
Man, sometimes it's always hit or miss to me when they take calls. Like when I listen to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervive. When they take callers, like, it's either laugh out loud funny or like, oh my god, why are you doing this? Like, it's always one or the other for me, dude. But that cracks me up, like, that you hate it so much.
Dude, it's like 1 out of 10 is decent to me. Like, 1 caller out of 10 is like, okay, that was a somewhat intelligent question. It's right. Like, they call and say, is Cody Rhodes ever going to be WWE champion? why would you come up with that? You know, that kind of thing. It was just like, I don't know. I don't know. It annoys me to no end. He would do it like every Wednesday, and I'm like, that would be the one day I didn't listen to the show. I just, even in Oklahoma, there's this station called The Franchise, and the best thing about them is they don't take calls.
Right.
I don't want to hear from those people. I want to hear from the experts. I want to hear from the people I tuned in and listened to.
Right, you know, right. Kind of.
So, no, I was like, but yeah, I really do love Taz. I'm putting him over, but as he would hate if I said that. He hates when people that aren't in wrestling use wrestling terms, even though wrestling terms have become fairly normal in American talk or whatever.
Right.
I hate people that don't watch wrestling say they're putting someone over. I've heard that.
Really?
Like, they don't even know it came from wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, he's like, dude, I'm not, he like, I didn't mean to put, you know, I was putting you over really good. And I'm like, what? I was like, do you know that? Never mind. Because they've heard it somewhere. And, you know, because of Total Divas, that has a lot of wrestling fans, a lot of fans that aren't wrestling fans, but they use a lot of wrestling terms.
I didn't know that. So Total Divas use a lot of wrestling terms on the show?
I mean, they talk about wrestling. They talk about who's going over, who's, you know, that kind of thing. They try not to go too deep into it. But, like, going over is not a big – it's not as a protected term as it used to be.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I got you.
It's normal now.
Yeah, I got you.
You can talk to a casual and he's like, who went over?
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, it stopped being who won. It's kind of like who went over. And I know, and like I said, I know I'm reminded all the time that my wrestling world is not very big, but the people outside of my wrestling world, I'm humongous. So when I hear them using, like, normal wrestling terms in normal sentences, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's not a protected business anymore.
Right.
So I don't even see why you would get upset over that.
That's definitely a topic that we should talk about sometime, is wrestling terms and when kayfabe started coming down and all that. That'd be a good topic one day.
Yeah, because I'm like you. I want kayfabe back.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude, if I could go back to my mentality between 12 and 14. Between 12 and 14 is when I had always been told by my dad that it wasn't real. But between 12 and 14, I had this little, it was the awakening part. It was like until 15, I was like woke or whatever. But 12 to 14, it was just like, I want my guy to win, and I was enjoying it, and I was rooting for my guy, and I was still emotionally invested, and I didn't care about everything else that went into wrestling. I just wanted my guy to win, yeah. You know? So if Shawn Michaels would have lost at WrestleMania 12, that would have broke my heart. You know, like he really lost.
Right,
and
right.
It was just like, you know, it was a great feeling to be emotionally tied into every match the person had.
Agreed.
Yeah, but now it's just like, well, it looks like Drew McIntyre is about to get a push. So, well, let's say you're a Zack Ryder fan, right? Hardcore Zack Ryder fan. And they got Drew McIntyre versus Zack Ryder. Even the hardcore fans is not going to think Zack Ryder has any chance of winning that match.
Right, right.
And I missed where you thought he might.
Mm-hmm. Y'all know, dude, I remember being so emotionally involved with DDP, Goldberg, and then when I first switched over to WWF at the time, Stone Cold. Those three guys, I was so emotionally involved with those. I did not want to see DDP lose. I definitely didn't want to see Goldberg lose, and I didn't want to see Stone Cold lose. Those three guys, so emotionally involved with them.
Yeah, and it was a true emotional thing. It was like when DDP lost, it hurt you. Yeah. You know what I mean? When Shawn lost, it hurt me. And it was just like, and that's the kind of emotion that I want in wrestling again. And it's just like, with all the podcasts, with everything we listen to, well, this person's getting a push. This person's got beef with the back office. And with me, because I'm part of the IWC, I see it even when I don't want to see it.
Right.
Just because it's just there for me.
Yep.
And it sucks. It's like, sometimes you can have too much access.
Yep. I know the feeling, man. I definitely know that feeling.
But we still love it. And I still love it. Like I said, I have three tattoos. Two of them are wrestling. And it's the love of my life. WrestleMania week is, like, seriously, basically, you can set my life by that clock. I'm sharing a hotel. I've bought my WrestleCon 2-day pass, and I got my first ticket to the WrestleCon Super Show.
I dig it, man. I dig it. Planning ahead.
It's imprinted. It's funny. Being a fan is in my DNA, and it's like some people might not find that, you know, great. They're like, well, why don't you do it? I'm like, I don't know. It's just, to me, certain times it's just good to just, the emotion, everything that goes in, goes from being a spectator. You don't want certain things to be your job.
Right, right.
Yeah. But that's all.
I get it, man. I get it. And we will definitely be talking more about WrestleMania weekend and the weeks and months to come, because we've got a little over 90 days until, about 93 days or so until WrestleMania. So we'll be leading up.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Royal Rumble is the first stop on the road to WrestleMania. We're not even there yet.
I know. I'm excited for the Royal Rumble, too. We got two of them, obviously, because we got the men's and women's. So, but Floyd, tell us where you spend your weekends at, my friend.
I spend my weekends on this little show on thechairshot.com called Around the Ring. It is me and my friend Ryan, the great Aaron. Our shows drop Sundays right before noon this week. I think we had like 8 minutes to spare. It was kind of awesome. I like that. And we talk about the week in wrestling in general. We try to go a lot of different topics from what I talk about on my daily show, so you're just not hearing the same thing. So if you want to follow us, you can go to twitter.com/aroundtheringokay, or you can go to facebook.com/aroundtheringokay, and you'll hear from me and Ryan.
faux show. It's a great show. Everyone should be tuning into it each and every Sunday. Thank you all for tuning in to hear me and Floyd talk on this magnificent Monday morning. We'll be back tomorrow morning to review Raw, which we hope will bounce back from a so-so showing last week. Thank you all for tuning in this morning. I hope everyone had a good weekend. Enjoy the week. And for Floyd and myself, everyone stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?